You're listening to Vatican Radio. Evangelii Gaudium, a new vision for the Church. That's the theme of a symposium taking place on Friday in the Berkeley Center for Religion, Peace and World Affairs at Georgetown University, America's oldest Catholic university. The symposium explores four main aspects of Pope Francis's recent apostolic exhortation: its ecclesiology, its social justice agenda, its global engagement with international affairs, and its implications for the future of the Catholic Church. One of the main organisers of the meeting is Georgetown Professor Gerard Mannion, co-director of its Church and World programme and head of its Church and the Ecumenical Future Project. He talked to me about the symposium and about his views on the new vision contained in the Pope's apostolic exhortation.
It's clear from the outset of the document itself that it's an agenda for a new direction for the Church, and there's an intention behind it to change the mood and the focus and to bring some energy into the Church. Right at the beginning, you know, Pope Francis says what he wants to do, the aim of the document, is to set new paths for the Church's journey in years to come. Those are his own words. That doesn't really sound like business as usual. You know, the emphasis on joy throughout the document is all-consuming. He wants to try and switch the mood and get people concentrating on what's really important. You know, there's a great phrase at the outset, which is pertinent for this time of year. He says that there are Christians whose lives seem like Lent without Easter. And what he's trying to do is to get people to prioritize again what's really important, which for him is putting the gospel into practice.
You're looking at three main areas, aren't you, of the document?
Yeah.
Ecclesiology, yeah. Social justice, and the peace and reconciliation agenda.
Yeah, and all of those are interlinked. So our opening panel this morning explores the ecclesiological question, which is really trying to discern what's Pope Francis's vision for the Church, particularly in this document. And then, of course, central to that vision of the Church is that he wants it to be a church of and for the poor. Social justice is right at the center of his vision of the Church. And, of course, coming out of Latin America and shaped and influenced by the great achievements of liberation theology, he could do no other. So our second panel will explore aspects of that notion of a church of and for the poor and the social justice agenda in much more detail. The other thing of Francis's vision of the Church is that it must be open to the world and engaged with others in the world, picking up again from Vatican II and Gaudium et Spes in particular, which isn't referenced in many footnotes of the document, but its spirit permeates the document throughout, that openness. He speaks of a church, you know, that its doors are never closed. And so our third panel will be exploring aspects of that open global international engagement, the aspects on international relations, war and peace, justice in those wider contexts. And then finally, we have some wonderful people to try and reflect on, so what does this mean in practice for the Church? Where does the Church go for here? And people to do a little bit of crystal ball gazing and where they think this vision of the Church will take the Church in the years to come.
Now, you're mentioning Vatican II, and it's interesting, isn't it, Gerard, that this is the first pope of recent times not to have been present at the Second Vatican Council. How significant do you think this is?
I think it's very significant because it's also the first pope who's free of the baggage that comes with having been involved in those debates and immersed in the tensions and the divisions of Vatican II. Pope Francis takes Vatican II and its vision and its teachings as read. Right at the beginning of Evangelii Gaudium, he takes as his departure point, before he lists different areas of focus for his own document, he says his starting point is the vision of the Church in Lumen Gentium. And then again, throughout the document, his vision for the Church is equally that of Gaudium et Spes, a church that's open to and engaged with the world in all of its joys and also its sorrows, in its grief and anguish as well. So he's taking the vision of Vatican II as something that's non-negotiable. Now, of course, you could say, well, which vision of Vatican II? There are different debates about that. And, of course, the council itself was ambiguous on certain issues as well. So there's work to be done on the mixed messages, and we hear some of those continue to come out from Rome. But certainly the guiding principle for him is that openness to the world, picking up from John the 23rd, that the title of Evangelii Gaudium is, you know, it's reminiscent of Pope John's opening to the council, where his address was Gaudet Mater Ecclesia, Mother Church Rejoices. The emphasis on joy, on positive action, is permeating this document throughout, and that's coming from Vatican II too. So, you know, we're in a key stage for the church with regards to the council. And it's really now or never for Vatican II. It's either implemented in full in terms of the vision that the majority of the council fathers wanted to see for the church, or it's one of those councils that gets consigned to history as something which was a significant event at the time, but doesn't have lasting duration for the church. And I think Vatican II won't be one of those councils consigned to history. It will be one of the most significant councils in the history of the church.
On a much more practical note, it's interesting that Pope Francis gave President Obama a copy of Evangelii Gaudium during their meeting in the Vatican. Do you really think its message can be influential in some way, in at least suggesting more equitable ways of doing business and even politics?
I think so. The good thing is that, unlike popes, presidents can only serve for a certain amount of time. And that gives a certain amount of freedom in the second term for a president of the United States. And the signs so far are encouraging that President Obama actually has, in many ways, some analogous and common aims with Pope Francis in wanting to make a positive impact in terms of peace, in terms of dialogue, in terms of justice, eradicating poverty, in terms of things such as introducing healthcare for a whole tranche of U.S. society who previously had no access to healthcare. Now, of course, there are disputes among particularly American Catholics on some aspects of that policy, but the key common aim is that it's a question of social justice. I think President Obama will read the document and find a lot there, and I suspect he probably already has read some of the document. He will find a lot there that he can relate to and will be on common ground for him. He cut his teeth as a community organizer in some of the poorest neighborhoods of Chicago, and there, yes, he was coming out of his own particular church community, the Trinity Church community, but he also worked alongside Catholic social activists and saw the vision of Catholic social teaching in practice as well. So there are common aims, there's common ground there, and it makes a difference when the leader of the largest church and the largest single faith group on the planet has a programmatic agenda in this way that dovetails with many of the principles that got Obama elected. Now, in his first term, of course, people were a little bit disappointed that there wasn't more of that agenda being implemented. So I think it probably gives courage and sustenance to world leaders like President Obama that the Pope is making key issues such as eradicating poverty, such as resisting war and conflict at all costs, their priority, because it gets it on the agenda. And we only have to think about the day of prayer for peace in Syria, which really probably did help persuade some of the world leaders to step back from going in and entering another conflict that nobody would really be able to foresee the end of. So I think it will be good reading. And President Obama said that he will read it in moments of frustration, which suggests that he would use it for inspiration to energize his own thinking. And it's a document that could energize anybody's thinking. So I think it's a good thing. And of course, the other thing he gave him was one of the medallions that shows peace and harmony between the northern and southern hemispheres of the world. And that's incredibly symbolic and significant. You know, the message there is clear and unambiguous that the Pope is really saying, don't forget the poor.
Finally, this document, Evangelii Gaudium, has been widely received and hailed beyond the Catholic community. Do you think that this is the moment when the Catholic social teaching, so often described as the Church's best kept secret, will finally come into its own?
I think it will help bring it into certain areas of discourse and debate and practice where it's never been really explored and looked at before. Francis was already attracting the attention of the global media before this document came out, because people all of a sudden were looking at the church and the papacy in a much more positive light and an engaged light. So instead of just throwing brickbats at the church, all of a sudden people are listening to what's coming out of Rome. And that's got a lot to do with the style of Pope Francis, and also, you know, what he's choosing to focus on. And I think that conveys the message. People are willing to respect and give time to the perspective of him and the church that he represents and serves as its shepherd, because he's walking the walk as well as talking the talk. And I think all of a sudden, in one sense, people outside of Roman Catholicism, other Christians, people of other faiths, people of no faith, are almost more excited about the Pope than many Catholics are. So that can only be good news. And just like John the 23rd, with Pachamin Terrace. This document, of course, not everyone's going to read all 200-odd pages in, you know, intricate detail, but there are key passages that are being cited and quoted. The main media outlets of the world are picking up on the social agenda in particular, and that can only be a good thing. And Pachamin Terrace, of course, was read in Moscow and Washington, D.C., as much as it was read anywhere else. This document can have a really positive impact. And, of course, some people, they see a political ideology behind some aspects of the document. But really, it's not a political ideology. It's a teaching of the church from its very beginnings. The social justice agenda is there, and it's non-negotiable. And that's something that, since the 1980s, has sometimes been shoved aside in political debates and is somehow frowned upon in some societies, that somehow you can't make a positive difference to change the world. But Pope Francis, I think it's in section 183 of the document, you know, talks about that, well, it's our duty to try and change the world, to leave it even just a little bit better than we found it. And the church is called to serve and to change the world. And this document is serving the world in a very positive sense.
My thanks there to Gerard Mannion, Professor of Catholic Studies at Georgetown University.